What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we discuss all things disgusting in the horror world. I'm Zena, and during the month of November, I'm hosting a takeover month while Megan and John are on break. So welcome to Z-vember. So each week I'll have different guests co-hosting with me, and we'll discuss different horror topics, related per usual, and horror news and recommendations. But today I have three guests with me. Okay, so meet my co-hosts for the week. I will have them introduce themselves.
Who wants to go first?
Oh, Tyrone.
My name is the Evil Tyrone. I'm here. I do horror interviews and horror discussions with the horror community. You know, just kind of bringing everybody together, especially content creators of color. You know, just giving voices. Just amplifying more voices out there and, just having fun, just chopping it up. It's a laid back environment. You know, we just give our opinions and, we just have a lot of fun. And I'm happy to be here.
Yay. Thank you so much. And I can say, Tyrone, there's just something about you where I just want to tell you everything. So you make me feel very comfortable. So you just have a way with people.
Thank you.
And Molly?
Hello, my name is Molly Henry. Very happy to be here. I am probably most well known as a film critic, mostly for my own website, The Blogging Banshee. And then you might recognize me as the author of the Uterus Horror column on Certified Forgotten. And I am also co-author of the upcoming Queer Horror, a Film Guide, which will hopefully be out around February of next year.
Oh, awesome. Welcome, Molly. And Molly has fabulous hair. So I
don't know. It's just...
And finally, my sweet baby LT.
Hi, it's me, sweet baby LT, aka Queer Demon. I am a horror-loving junkie with a side of stitchery. I like to do embroidery pieces inspired by some of my favorite horror movies. And I also do like lots of unboxing videos. That's kind of become my favorite thing to do, is just like share my love of horror, like knickknacks, with the world. Apart from that, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and X at Queer Demon, but the O is a zero because unfortunately I was not fast enough. So.
Thank you so much for joining us. LT always has the best memes ever. So, okay, in this episode, we are going to dive into a horror round table. We have a couple of topics, and I'm so excited for us to, like, chat about it. But before we do dive in, we actually have a text message from a listener. So it says, "Hey, Zena," and insert guest here. "This is Sean." "Hello, Sean from Iowa. I know you love a good witchy horror. What are your top 27 witchy horror movies? Or top three, if that's too many. Love the show. Zena, you're killing it." Thank you. I do love witchy. I do love witchy horror. I would love to give you 27. But I'm also going to be, you know, considerate of everyone's time, as well as, you know, with my guests. So we are going to be giving our top three witchy horror movies. Would anyone love to go first?
Well, I guess I'll go first, you know, top three. The first one would be one that my late great aunt put me onto, Pumpkinhead, you know, which is just something near dear to my heart. Like, the witch in there just stuck with me even to this day, you know.
Yeah,
still stuck with me. Number two would be The Witches, you know, of course. Like, I love both, but the original, the OG, is just, you know, chef's kiss. Yes. You know. And number three would be The Autopsy of Jane Doe, you know. Love The Witch in there. So if you have not checked out The Autopsy of Jane Doe, it is a killer time, like, from start to finish. Love it.
Okay, Tyrone. Gosh, putting us all to shame. So, who wants to go next? I don't.
I can go. I will say that probably by the time these answers leave my mouth, I will probably have different answers. But I probably, the ones that come to mind first are obviously The Craft. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a classic. And it's because they actually got consultants, I like that it's actually closer to real life Wicca and witchcraft and things like that. So I like the care and attention they put into that. I also am, this isn't just one of my favorite witchy films, it's one of my favorite films in general, the 2018 Suspiria.
Yes.
Absolutely adore that film. And the witches in there are so badass.
And they're beautiful. And then,
yeah.
Yes. And then, of course, the Blair Witch Project. Like, to this day, one of the films that scares me the most, and it's just, it revolutionized found footage. Mm-hmm. And it, even without showing the witch, it's one of the most terrifying witches in film history. So
nice. Awesome, awesome choices.
I'll go.
Okay.
So one of my top picks that has actually turned me to recently is by my friend Justin. They recommended that I watch Eyes of Fire. And honestly, I was a little gagged. That movie kind of was a really fun little roller coaster for witchery. And then another one I got from The Wretched. That was like another one that kind of, I don't know, it's a bit more modern. Mm-hmm. Really kind of spooked me.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you would consider this one witchy, but like, there's a curse. And like, witchcraft is indeed afoot. But it is the Indonesian movie Empedocle.
Absolutely.
Love this movie. I turn it to like everyone that requests a movie that for foreign horror, I'm like, you gotta start here. Like, mm-hmm. It's one of the best.
Nice, nice. Okay. So I have to have Poison for the Fairies on my list. When I first saw the movie, I was just very confused. I didn't know how to feel about it. Because at first I thought I wasn't a fan, but then I found days, weeks later, months later, it was still on my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I love it. And I just, ever since I bought like the Blu-ray, it's been on repeat. I'm also going to go with Pie Wacket. And I love this movie. This movie creeped me out to the core, you know. And I remember, you know, seeing the poster. I skipped watching the trailer. I don't really like to watch trailers too much. And there was something about it, like, that just, you know when you watch something and you find yourself doing normal things like brushing your teeth and then you get a little bit nervous because you remember a scene. So I love that for me. And then the last one, I'm going to go with Wes Craven's Summer of Fear, because I remember I watched that one years ago. I think I was going on a binge just watching a whole bunch of Wes Craven stuff. And whoa, that movie, I just absolutely love the feel of it. I love the buildup of it. I felt like in some ways it's relatable. And then just the fact that, you know, this woman just came into these people's lives and she was ready just to take everything, you know? So that's always like a good time. So yeah, I absolutely love witchy horror movies. I could go on, but I'll just leave it at this three for now.
I love that we all had different answers too.
Yes. Yeah.
I almost said Pawlikett though.
And I almost said The Witches. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, a lot of recommendations, you know.
Yeah.
Because we have good taste.
And true. The Grand High Witch and The Witches, she's just so fabulous. I know she hated children, but she's so fab.
She didn't have
That's
to
my favorite
so
sweatshirt hard. Is of her.
But okay. We do have another email. Well, this one's an email from a listener. So basically, the question is, what is a habit in your daily life that attribute to your love of horror? This is from David in Louisville, Kentucky. So for example, before getting in my car, I will look in the windows of my car to make sure no one or nothing is hiding in the back seat or cargo space, thanks to a few movies, but mainly Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning. Thanks for taking the time to for my question and the hours and joy you provided through this podcast. Oh, David! Okay. I'll go first for this one. Arachnophobia scarred me as a child. I still to this day do not like spiders. I don't like any creepy crawly type of stuff. I know like people saying, oh, you're a real queen of horror. Yeah, but I don't like it. And I always check my shoes before putting them on because you never know. You know, it's just, yeah. It's that for me.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I would say for me, something that contributes is, well, as a kid, I was watching a lot of Are You Afraid of the Dark? And for some reason, there were a lot of old folks that were the villain in those episodes. So
yeah.
Just old people in general, like I have this irrational fear when I'm home alone. And I feel like an old woman is just going to rise up from the floorboards and drag me. To drag me to the down under, you know, where do I get this? You know, where, like, I'm a 35 year old man. I don't know why this still affects me to this, but it is what it is, you know, old folks, because of Are You Afraid of the Dark, you know.
I would probably have to say for me, like, it would be either Courage the Cowardly Dog or Jumanji that taught me to, like, kind of be afraid, but still kind of go for it. I guess those were like pretty big milestones. And I was like a kiddo.
Nice.
Mine is kind of embarrassing. As soon as you asked the question, I knew what the answer was going to be. And I knew I was going to be embarrassed.
It's a safe space.
So I'm sure you're all familiar with the movie Darkness Falls. So specifically from the cold opener of that one, when the main character's a little kid and experiences the tooth fairy or whatever you want to call her. Since seeing that movie, if I wake up during the night to go to the bathroom or I have to let the dogs out or something, I don't open my eyes all the way because I'm worried that I'm going to see something in the darkness that I shouldn't see. Mm. So I'll walk around with my eyes just barely open, like enough so I can see what's on the floor in front of me and not trip. And it's really embarrassing to admit that, but it's all because of Darkness Falls.
You know, that's very smart, actually.
Yeah, because I need if I'm just barely looking at the ground, I'm not going to see if there's anything creepy that's waiting for me to look at it.
Exactly. If I can't,
I don't want to die.
If I can't see the evil, it can't see me.
Yeah,
exactly.
Awesome. Okay. See, and then we're also giving people tips in life. So
stay safe.
But okay, so you guys ready for our first topic?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
All right. So a couple of days ago, it'll be over a week by the time this is posted, Monkey Paw posted on their social media an article from Collider discussing the villains who drink milk. And it says, this is what makes milk such a sinister beverage. The drink of choice for villains these days is milk. Question mark. Okay, so I'd like to know from you, if you could name a villain that lives in your head rent-free, like just lives there forever, that is a milk drinking villain? Who is someone that comes to mind?
I would have to say right off the bat, you know, Hans from Inglourious Bastards, you know, when he was drinking his glass. It's just something very, very sinister about it. Plus, for me, I'm lactose intolerant, so milk is the enemy anyway.
Me too. You know, so. We all are. Yeah. We're so connected.
Oh my gosh. The only thing we don't tolerate is lactose.
Yeah, I didn't have my first root beer float until like last year, you know, so because of the vegan ice cream options and things like that. So yeah, but seeing Hans drink it and just how sinister he was and just the mood. It just, every time I watch that scene, I feel the sweat, you know, I feel the nervousness. It just takes me there. So yeah, Hans, all the way.
Okay, wait, real quick. Let's just steer off down a rabbit hole real quick. Have you all been lactose intolerant your whole life, or did it develop?
Oh, yeah.
I think every my year. Whole life, I just didn't care until I was older.
Yeah, now it's to the point to where I'm like, I'm scheduling my day. Like, if I'm doing something tomorrow, am I going to be able to survive this milkshake? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, of course.
Okay.
You know, get the salted caramel milkshake.
You deserve happiness. Good choice.
Like, as a kid, like, I would feel certain reactions. And, you know, my parents, they'd be like, no, drink your milk. You know, you're not getting up from that seat until you drink your milk. So I would literally sit there 2 hours staring at the glass till they're like, all right, you know, you can get up, pour the milk down the drain. So, you know, it's, I knew it since a kid, you know, I could never prove it. I should probably get an allergy test and, you know, send it to my parents, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it's been for me. There was always something there. Like, I didn't really care. I would just do it anyway. And then one time, someone was like, hey, why don't you try almond milk? And I became so obsessed with almond milk. This was maybe like 6-7 years ago. Yeah, maybe 6-7 years ago. Anyway, started drinking it. I left milk alone for a month. And then I remember I tried to go back. I literally thought I was going to die. Like, no, it felt like somebody was like stabbing my stomach, where I just felt nauseous. But luckily, because I ate a cream cheese bagel today, but I now take pills to help. Yes.
Lactate is my savior.
It is everything. They have ice cream. They have milk. It's just, it feels so good to just be able just to have ice cream, to have something again that just makes you feel wonderful, you know? So, okay, just had to go down that rabbit. I'm so happy that we all relate. No one feels my pain. But okay, so back to the milk drinking villain.
The one that comes to mind for me, just because it's even more disgusting because it is actual human breast milk, is Homelander from The Boys. I mean, he already is a horrifying person to begin with, but watching him drink breast milk just makes it so much worse. That will haunt me to the end of my days.
Okay. I think mine is a bit less like involved with a horror movie. It actually harkens back to like Disney Channel. So obviously we're all of the same generation and we grew up with Kim Possible, right? So Kim Possible's villain, Draken, Dr. Draken, he invents this machine one day where it makes him turn from evil to good. And when he becomes good, his obsession is chocolate milk, but he calls it his cocoa moo. And honestly, I've never been able to like not refer to chocolate milk as cocoa moo. It's just like every single time, even if it's not even like chocolate milk, like hot chocolate or whatever. It's just, that's always what sticks with me. I feel like I was like born to answer this question or something.
I love that. Okay. Just because I recently rewatched this movie for research and I wish that I didn't, because I mean, it's a great movie, but you know, it's just one of those movies that really just kind of like, eh. The Hills Have Eyes, the 2006 remake, Lizard. First off, he creeped me out so bad, but not only does he just like attack this family who's minding their own business, him and some other cannibals on the loose, they go into this camper. He's going through the fridge. He jugs the milk, you know, just drinking it. Then he also attacks a woman, you know, trying to get her breast milk. And I just, it was just a horrible experience. Yeah, I had to forward past that part. A lot of parts, actually, in that movie. It's a pretty brutal movie. And it's like one of those that's still to this day, even though it came out back in like 2006, but it's still very effective. So immediately when I saw that they were discussing like villains, you know, drinking milk, I thought about Lizard, which I haven't in a while, thank God. So, but yeah, but okay. I just love that. I love the uniqueness of that kind of like list and everything. But so let's move on to the next one. So this one is about Saw X, and it's also about Five Nights at Freddy's. So Saw X just passed $100 million worldwide, and Five Nights at Freddy's passed $200 million this week. So without any spoilers, why do you think these movies did so well in theaters? Or just did so well in general?
Well, I think Saw, like, it's got, of course, the brand recognition, but I think that they did something interesting and new as far as, you know, their take on the franchise this time around, you know. So it was a little refreshing, and, you know, from what I had heard and from what, like, I saw the movie, but, you know, from just what was in the air, like people were very receptive to it. So, you know, word mm-hmm. of mouth and Five Nights at Freddy, you know, also brand recognition. Like, even if you were somebody like me who hasn't played the game, but, you know, watch the Let's Plays and things like that, it's just like a must see, like you got to check it out, you know. And I saw it and it was pretty good. Like, I feel like it was a nice entry level, you know, horror movie. Like, you know, there's yeah. a lot of people can watch it and, you know, dive into it. So it's an easy watch.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I think it's definitely that brand recognition for both of them, probably at least in the horror community, probably Saw more so has the brand recognition, but both of them have those longstanding brands. But I also think it helped that they were horror films released in October. Mm-hmm. So not only do they have the regular horror crowd who would go see them, but now all the people who only watch horror in October are going to go out and see those movies as a way to kind of celebrate Halloween and stuff. So I think those two things combined definitely helped those films.
Yeah, and also like all of the audience was like primarily Gen Z people when I went. So it's like all of these, like, obviously they were like much younger when they were introduced to it, but now, you know, they're old enough to buy their own movie tickets. So it's kind of neat that they get to fill the butts with the seats and what, or fill the right. seats with the butts. Oh my goodness. and it's really nice to see that like horror can be enjoyed by like more than just your regular horror fans. It's really nice mm-hmm. to see that they're kind of welcoming it with open arms. It's like killer robot teddy bear dude.
I agree with all of you. I know, like, I have a 10-year-old niece, and I remember before she's like, oh, I don't like horror. But then she went to go see Five Nights at Freddy's about 3 times already, you know? So it's just kind of, and no, she don't want to watch it like on Peacock. She went to the theaters to see it, you know? And it's just like, all right, yeah. Girl, live your life. Like, her parents, they support her decision. So, but even with that, I noticed that she's slowly getting into some things, like, not saying that Wednesday, as an example, is at all like a horror. But even when it came to like darker stuff like that, she wasn't a fan. And then again, I even have some older nephews, okay, who are like, one is 20. I know, okay? He's 20. And he's into... Oh, what was that? Okay. He's into it, you know? So it's just like... And this is coming from someone who he really doesn't like horror. He's not too big on Halloween. But he went to go see Saw X with his friends, had a good time, and Five Nights at Freddy's. And obviously, if there are more of these movies, I just see that continuing on. And I just love the fact, again, you know, LT said this, that, you know, they're welcoming it with open arms. So that's really, you know, cool to see. So, okay. I love how we're just moving right along. So now we're going to move to Fear Street franchise. So it was just recently announced, Netflix, they updated us on the future of it. So, We'll be getting another one. Woohoo! Yeah. So, which is great. So if you are a fan of the, you know, the franchise, I want to know, how do you rank it? And, you know, if you can give why.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Ooh, I would say with the Fear Street franchise, the first, I would say top tier for me is 1978, you know, is top tier. Because I feel like it gives me that vibe, that camp vibe, you know. And it was, I just feel like it was well done, you know, super well done out of all three. The second one would be 1994, you know, because again, it gives me that nostalgic vibe, you know. Grew up in the 90s, so I'm like, okay, this is my type of feel, you know. So I love when now we're getting directors and writers going back to that era and looking at it from their lens, you know. We're getting, you know, millennial people behind the cameras and things like that. So I'm loving that. And then, you know, 1666, which was not bad at all. Even though it's at the bottom of my list, it was not bad at all. I really enjoyed that as well. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I love the Fear Street trilogy. I actually just rewatched it in October for Halloween. It's funny. I have a very different order. Number one for me is actually 1666. But that is because it's queer and witchy, which is all the things I like. So naturally, that's the one that I'm gravitating towards. And I don't know if I should say this since it's spoiler, even though it's been out for a couple years now.
Okay, spoilers.
I like that it changes the story so the witch isn't the villain. That's one of the things that I love about that one. And then next would be 78. I just love the look and feel of it. I love Ziggy. I think she's a great character. Really, I love all the characters in that one. But I love the look of the killer in that one, too. And then for me, it would be 1994. But it's only because like, obviously, like, I grew up in the 90s. I love all the music in it. I love the look of it. That one has arguably the best kills as well. For me, it's only because the relationship between Dina and Sam is so toxic in that one. And it, like, at first when I was watching, I was like, this is not great queer representation. But then by the time you watch all the way to the end to 1666, it's all better. So it's fine. But just if I'm looking at that one by itself, I was not a fan of the relationship, but everything else I love in that one.
Yeah, I'm very much similar in that regard for that one also being like last place in my ranking. But it's like, it's just so hard because like they're so good. And I mean, my ranking starts out with 78. I love Sackhead Jason. I am unapologetic about that. Plus, this is like the one with the hottest horror himbo. So, and he gets a great death, you know? And then I also like Queer and Witchy, which is why 1666 is my next pick. I don't know. I mean, like, I wasn't really initially a fan of, like, the accent work. But, like, once I turned that part of my brain off, I was like, okay, we're having a good time. Everyone is, you know, going to the church to get their eyeballs plucked. But, you know, we're having fun. We're having a good time. And we're doing it together. Yeah. And, like, as much as I do love 1994, like, that's also why, with what Molly said, like, the relationship was just so, like, I don't know. I just wanted to like reach through the TV screen and like separate them and be like, girlies, we're not making progress. So we just got to step it up and like be like, this isn't good for either of you. We need to either go our separate ways or we need to talk it out.
Okay. So mine kind of switches sometimes. Sometimes I just love how it was released. 94, 78, 1666. But I also have a thing for 70s horror movies. You know, there's just something very magical about them. So 78, 94, 1666, but they're all good. It's just so crazy how, like, even when you think about, you know, some franchises, sometimes we get some movies that's just like, eh, that one wasn't really too great. But I feel like genuinely all of the movies are so great, you know? And I'm curious to know, for you all, I'm not too sure if this will be like your first pick, the movie that you said first in this ranking. Which one would you recommend to someone to start off watching? Like, so say if they're completely new to the franchise, which one do you think that you would just like recommend for them to start off like watching?
I mean, I personally would have them go in the release order.
Yeah.
I think it would probably be confusing if they didn't start with 94, especially since it's the kind of film that reveals more about the lore with each edition. So I think definitely starting with 94 is the way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. 94. Especially because just the way the story was told. Like, I feel like it's going to make more sense. Plus, the cliffhangers, you know, it's just, I love, it's just something about 94, you know.
Truly, truly, truly. Yeah, I think release order would definitely be the best way, but I would argue that you could also start with 78, just due to the fact, like, the cold open is basically a quick, brief summary of, like, what happened.
Right.
So, like, obviously you could just, like, be like, oh, okay, this is, like, if you would recommend to a person, there's that movie, The Third Saturday in October, Part 5. Like, definitely, like, do it. Like, just watch that one as it is, like, where it's at in the order. And it just kind of, like, helps it along a little that it's got that, like, bit of exposition. But, yeah, I could totally see someone starting with, like, 78.
For sure. Actually, I was going to, the reason why I brought that up, I have a friend who, he usually recommends for people to start with 78.
Nice.
And for that same reason, you know, you kind of get, like, a briefing and stuff like that. And then go to 94, then go to 1666. I kind of like the order that it's released. Just do it. Just, you know, just watch just watch it the regular way, you know, and then see how you feel about it. So, but okay, before we move on to the next topic, I just want to remind our listeners about our giveaway. So we are giving away a Bloody Disgusting bundle. So the bundle features like a t-shirt. It's the Bloody, Bloody, Bloody Disgusting t-shirt. Bloody Disgusting enamel pen. We also have the Bloody Disgusting sticker pack and a free year-long subscription to Screenbox. So if you want to win this bundle, you can just send in a horror-related question and you'll be entered to win. And then, yeah, I'll announce the winner at the end of this month. So you have to keep a lookout for that. So you can call or text us at 224-475-1040. The number is also in the show notes too, or feel free to email us. Email us at vdisgustingpodcast@gmail.com. Or if, you know, if you're shy, again, you can text, you can send us a DM. You can also send us an email. So there you go. All right. So we have about three more topics and we might even have a bonus. Okay. So with Thanksgiving coming up, I want us to talk about the final poster for Eli Roth's Thanksgiving. So it pays tribute to the 90s, early 2000s slasher movie poster. And the tagline is, there will be no leftovers, which that just makes me so happy. Well, first, what do you guys think about the poster?
I think it was amazing, especially because I've been hungry for this movie, you know, for years. Seems like, was it over a decade, you know, feels like 20 years. I know it's not been 20 years, but it feels like 20 years, you know? So I'm just excited.
Yeah.
I I personally thought the poster was a little lackluster. I think for me too, it's just because since this film started as a faux trailer in Grindhouse and it had that very Grindhouse 70s look to it, I think it would have been cool if they had carried that over to the poster and given the poster more of a 70s look.
Right.
Or at least like had it be more that kind of painterly style that was more popular back then. Because I feel like so many slasher type movies these days, like it looks very much like the two newest Scream movie posters. So I would like, I personally would like a little more variety, a little bit more artistry, but I love the tagline and I'm still definitely interested to see the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait.
This poster, like I agree with you, Molly. I'm so surprised that they didn't go more 70s. You know, I love the poster. But sometimes, you know, when you want some gore in your life, not sometimes, but majority of the time, that's just how you feel with some stuff, especially where it's with the whole, there will be no leftovers. It's just like, I want to see some heads.
Or a hand. Like a severed hand. Or like, you know, in the cranberry sauce, there's an eyeball floating, you know, like.
Yeah. Give something that shows us why there's going to be no leftovers.
So I'm curious to know, what are some of your favorite posters and favorite taglines? You could put them together. It could be separate. Let me know.
I would say Dr. Giggles, you know, from the, I think it was the 90s. And the tagline was, the doctor is out of his mind. You know, it just actually like seeing that movie, because I saw it for the first time like last year, and I'm like, this is completely accurate to the movie. This guy was totally whacked out. And I don't know, it's just something I love a cheesy tagline on a poster. There's something about it, you know, it takes me back to like the Goosebumps days, you know, just going to the book fairs and picking out a book, and you know, just seeing those cheesy taglines with the cheesy type covers, you know, there's nothing like it, you know.
This is tough. I am such a very indecisive person, but I the first one that came to mind for this was the poster for the Monster Squad. Again, I love that kind of painterly style of posters, and I like that it's the kids are really bright and colorful, but then the monsters looming in the background, they're all that blue tone, like they're in the shadows. And it has the longest tagline, but it's so good. It's, you know who to call when there are ghosts, but who do you call when there are monsters? And it's so good. It's so long. If I'm talking just purely amazing tagline, it's probably, I think it was Alien was the one that's in space, no one can hear you scream. Like, that's probably one of the best ones, but I just love the comedy of the Monster Squad one, and it fits so well with the tone of the film.
I don't know if I have, like, a favorite poster. I mean, obviously, like, Army of Darkness comes to mind, because it looks like literally like a romance novel, and it's absolutely features one of the most beautiful men in horror. But I would probably have to go with like Deep Red. Oh my gosh. Deep Red is one of my absolute favorite posters, and also one of my favorite giallos in general, just because it's like, I don't know. I love the layers and the variety that it is. And we were just talking about it, like being from the 70s and all that artistry is just like, I eat it up. But as far as the tagline goes, I actually love the one from Pieces, because it mentions Texas in it. So it says, you don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. And it's just so iconic. I love it. I love it every time.
Okay, awesome choices. So I have two favorite taglines. So the first one from... You guys saw that, right?
What is it?
I don't know. Okay, listeners, I'm sorry. So the software that we record on, whenever I do like these stuff with my hands, like something pops up and I don't know. It's not working now. Okay. Okay.
It knows you're talking about it.
Okay, so the first tagline I really like, Night of the Creeps. The good news is your dates are here. The bad news is that they're dead. And it's just like, okay, you have jokes. Like, who cares? You know? So I always love that one. And then another tagline, which I feel like Tyrone will really appreciate, Abby. You know, oh, Abby doesn't need a man anymore. The devil is her lover. And it's just like, isn't she married? Like, I don't know. It's just
it's so black exploitation. You know,
I love that. It's, movie.
The movie is so insane. Like, it's but bonkers. And I knew it was gonna be just by that tagline. You know. So that one, I really love that one. And then favorite poster-wise, there's so many. Of course, Night of the Demons, 1988, that one's just perfection. But I really love Fright Night, the 1985 version. I think that it's just very beautiful. And recently, something more recent, I love the poster for When Evil Lurks. They put out this poster where it was kind of like on a farmland. Yes! It was kind of like on a farmland. The finger's like pointing down, but the earth is like cracked and stuff. And it's just like, I literally lost my mind with that poster. And then even when I hit up the director, he told me like, oh, you know, they're actually not going to that's not going to be the main poster. And I felt like saying, no, you know, so they actually ended up with another poster. It's like kind of red and has some white in it. The poster's cool, but it didn't like make me lose my mind or like that particular poster.
Yeah, that's the one with the axe in the face, right?
Yes. That's the one. I know. So I didn't lose my mind.
Yeah, it's like just red with a silhouette and stuff.
The finger is way cooler. It's got much more variety and depth, but we're happy to have either.
We are. But those, I don't know. But yeah, is there any other posters that pop to mind? If not, we can just keep it going.
I think Child's Play 2. Like Child's Play 2. I really dig that poster. You know, just the toy box and, you know, things like that. Like it even to this day, like it still brings me joy, you know. Mm-hmm. Just that look.
There's a couple from Puppet Master that come to mind.
Yes, I was thinking that.
Yeah, I like unapologetically love Puppet Master. It's so much fun. But definitely from, I think it's the third one, Curse of the Puppet Master. And it is just like, it's featuring all of my favorite little puppets. You know, you got like I don't know if his name's Pinhead. It's like the one that's like a tiny head, but he's got like enormous hands. Love him. He's definitely one of my faves. And then Leech Woman, who I definitely want to dress up for as Halloween one day as soon as I figure out how to do the leech thing.
Prunes. That would be amazing.
Right? Just gotta like prunes, maybe. I mean, they don't gotta be real like leeches. Obviously, I'm not gonna do that. But like, I don't know. Just going to a Halloween party dressed as Leech Woman and just like vomiting prunes. It's goals for sure.
You need to talk to that Harry Potter prop person because they did the slugs.
Oh, yes.
In like the second movie, I think. And I think they even said they were chocolate flavored. So then they would taste good too.
Perfect. I love chocolate.
Love that. Okay. Just for me, another one that comes to mind is like the Amityville franchise. Mm. That franchise, I love the franchise. Like, it just gets more and more insane. And they're unapologetic about it, and I love that for them. And I'm gonna watch them. That's one thing about me. I will watch it. So I just love the fact that with each theme, there's just like, you know, it represents like, even though there's one with a dollhouse, there's one with a clock, you know, and then you see it on the poster. So that's really cool. Just like that cheese type of aspect added in there.
I also think the Dead Alive poster is probably one of the most iconic posters of all time. I just remember that even though I never rented it as a kid, I didn't see it until I was in my 20s. I just remember every time I would go through the horror section, mm-hmm. that would be the VHS that I would hone in on because it just looks so terrifying.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Also, Motel Hell. Like, Motel Hell's cover is just so unhinged. So unhinged.
Okay, awesome stuff. So let's talk about some TV series since we did cover, you know, movies and everything like that. So if you watched any horror TV series this year, which one do you highly recommend? And you can include as many as you like.
Ooh, this year, I feel like.
Or just if that's too tough too, because it's true. What is time? Let's say from any year.
From, I mean. I really love Lovecraft Country. You know, that's mm-hmm. one that that comes to mind. But I would have to say, like, from this past year, mm-hmm. Really digging From, you know, huge mystery. You really mm-hmm. they really don't answer too much in that show, but I'm still falling down the rabbit hole. I'm like, let me go down deeper. Let me take this elevator mm-hmm. all the way down. Let me find out what's going on with these people. If you have not checked out From, like, it definitely grips you from the very first episode, you know, and it keeps you invested, you know, definitely keeps you invested. So, and it's on, I think it's on, what is, it was on Epix, but they changed, was it MGM Plus? Mm-hmm. Yeah, MGM mm-hmm. Plus now. So, you know, yeah, check out From, you know.
Awesome recommendation.
I will stick to this year because if I expand it beyond that, it will be far too difficult for me. these are two shows that have been on for a while, but obviously they had seasons this year. What We Do in the Shadows is just one of my favorite shows ever. It is so funny. And it's every time I think that they are going to run out of things to do and ways to be funny, they just keep it going. I want to live in that house with those vampires. They are hilarious. I aspire to be Nadja.
So. Yes.
And then I also really love the Chucky series. Yes. I think it actually has, in a lot of ways, surpassed a lot of what was done in the films, even though I love the films mm-hmm. too. Like, the show is just so good, and the representation on it is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I love the core three characters and their evolution over the seasons. And this season that's going on right now has been absolutely insane so far. So definitely recommend checking that one out.
I probably recommend Junji Ito's Maniac. It's the Japanese Tales of the Macabre. It's currently on Netflix. And mm-hmm. it basically just covers, I mean, it's kind of like an anthology. It's just like all of his like previous work, and it's brought to life. So if you're unaware, Junji Ito is a very famous mangaka, which means he's like the artist behind some of the most depraved and disturbing imagery that you could probably lay your eyes on. But it takes like a lot of his older stories as well as like some of his newer stuff, which is not what a lot of people get to see animated very mm-hmm. frequently. And you know, will you squirm? Probably. But yeah, it's worth it. It's totally worth it. And it's like a really fun watch. And another one that I would recommend, I think I found this one on like Crunchyroll. And it's another anime called Yami Shibai. And it's very stylistic. Ooh. It is, all of the episodes are only like 4 to 5 minutes. But they touch on like urban legends of Japan. And the art for it is almost like paper theater. So it's like mm-hmm. very stylistic. The characters move in such a way to where it's like they're, I don't know. It's just like a little unsettling to look at just due to the like uncanniness of it sometimes. But that's another one I'd highly, highly recommend to check out if you're wanting to watch like more anime that involves horror.
Okay, awesome. For me, I'm going to recommend the Last of Us. You know, it was a very popular series that came out earlier this year, and it had me, like, the feels. My spirit left my body a couple of times, which was great, kind of, you know. it was a really good time. I feel like there's something for everyone. So even if you've never played the game before, I think that you'll still enjoy it. I played the game, one of the video games, like, a long time ago. So it's just, like, really cool to see, and then, you know, no spoilers, but gosh, just make sure you're ready, okay? That's that. And then second one, Connect. I think that it came out last year, or maybe this year. Again, what is time? It's like this South Korean sci-fi horror series, and it's about a serial killer based on a webtoon, but there is a supernatural twist, and right away I was completely hooked. I think I binged it in almost a day. Because I could not get enough of it. So that one's really cool. And that one's on Hulu. Oh, and then The Last of Us is on Max or HBO Max with that one. So stepping outside of, oh, wait, do you guys have any bonuses? Not saying that you have to. Just want to make sure that you're like clearing the air.
Creepshow.
Series.
I'm gonna drop Creepshow. Oh, yeah. They've been surprising me every season. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been consistent with what they're doing, you know, so. I'm really in this past season. I was really digging, you know, a lot of the episodes. So Creepshow definitely in there.
Nice. Yeah, talking about zombies in South Korea. One show that I think I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but is one that I don't remember hearing anyone talking about. The show on Netflix, All of Us Are Dead, which is the kids in the high school in South Korea, and it's a zombie outbreak happens, and it's like the weird social dynamics on top of them having to worry about being eaten by zombies and stuff. I loved that show, and I don't remember hearing anyone talk about it, so I highly recommend checking it out. I hope that it gets picked up for a second season because they left it so open at the end of that show. I want more of it. I just don't know if enough people watched it. Yeah. So maybe if everyone listening goes and watches it, they will pick it up for another season.
I need to watch it.
It's so
it's amazing. It's amazing.
Okay. So, all right, let's move on to, we're still gonna be talking about series, but I kind of want to step outside of the horror. If there is a series that you really dig, that's not really a horror, but it does have like that horror type of vibe going on.
Ooh,
that's the first part, and I'll wait for the second part. Sorry.
Oh yeah, no problem. I would say Atlanta. Atlanta for me definitely has like a lot of horror aspects in it, you know, especially the way it's shot, you know, the way the lines are delivered, the way the mood is. There was a lot of episodes throughout, I think it was four seasons, throughout its four seasons, I was like, this is a horror show. So you can't tell me any different. This is a horror show.
For me, it's definitely Reservation Dogs. Adore that show to begin with. Clearly, I really like FX shows because that's also where What We Do in the Shadows is. But, I mean, the show is very much a comedy and a drama. I feel like I laugh and cry in pretty much every episode. But there are also a lot of horror themes throughout. Like, they talk about horror movies a lot, but also... there are a few episodes that involve like the Legend of the Deer Woman, which I am obsessed with that lore and the way that they do it. It's she's threatening, but only to the people who deserve it, which I like also. But that show is amazing. I'm very sad it's over, but I'm glad it ended on a high note also because some shows go on a little
too long. Gosh, yeah.
But definitely highly recommend that. It's a great combination of comedy and drama, and just stories that you don't typically see on TV, which I like also.
So I have two, I think. One is definitely like more horror adjacent than the other. But I'll keep that one for last. So the first would be Adventure Time. Adventure Time has some of the most disturbing imagery I have ever seen in my young life, not gonna lie. Like, between the design for the Lich and, like, the creepy stuff that happens with the lemon grabs, it's just, like, it's body horror fuel. It, like, definitely showed me that things can be scary but also cool-looking at the same time. Like, specifically the lemon grab episode where they have, like, they're, like, starving for candy because they keep turning the candy into their people. And so, like, but they turn them into these, like, wild, like, amalgam experiment that's absolutely terrifying. But there's the other show, which is called Girl from Nowhere. And similar to All of Us Are Dead, I also don't hear a lot of people talk about this. But my sister recommended this to me a couple years ago. And it is basically about this girl who comes to this school as a new student and uncovers like everyone's deepest, darkest secrets. And some of those secrets are far left better in the dark.
But that's
really
on Netflix, right?
Exactly. Yeah. On Netflix. It's a pretty easy watch. I haven't made it through the second season. So like if you have, kudos to you. You're more of a fan than I am. But it's pretty great to see like high school through like a different lens, but like two, it's just like these kids are undergoing something like absolutely terrifying and horrifying, but like at the end of the day they're still like just teenagers and they're still trying to just like make it by. So it's like all this like added societal pressure and like, you know, they're trying to get into like good universities and such. So I don't know. I eat that stuff up too. So
I started watching the show and then I don't know what happened. I stopped watching it, but I was really enjoying it. I think I only made it to the first season, like the second or third episode, but it's pretty intense. Like some of the stuff that goes on. So yeah, a good recommendation. Yeah. For me, I also have two. So the first one is The Other Black Girl on Hulu. It's, I don't really know. It's not really a horror, but it has like horror-y stuff. And I did talk about it on the podcast and I think I said the same thing. But again, just the vibes are there. For me, I just loved when I first started watching it. It's kind of also like a mystery, you know? I have a thing for mysteries. I used to be so obsessed with Veronica Mars. Still kind of am, you know, just a little bit. And so this, you know, this woman, she's not solving cases, but she is trying to figure out something. There's something strange going on in the office. And I kind of love the journey as the viewer that we go on the ride with, you know, that we pretty much take through the show. And for me, it was just such a satisfying ending, even though I need season two, but it was a satisfying ending. I just highly recommend it. It's funny. You know, there's some parts that's a little spooky, just a little slippet, you know? So there's that. Then the other one is actually a Netflix show, The Watcher. I don't know. It's more of a thriller, you know, but basically about these people that moves into like their dream home and then only to be plagued. Like they're pretty much receiving these letters from some random person, you know, people are breaking into their home and apparently it's based on a true story, you know, and it's just like, whoa. So I don't really think that there'll be a season two. I kind of hope that as much as I love the show, I don't really need a season two. But just seeing what the family, what they went through, it's like, what a nightmare. Moving is already hard anyway, but imagine you were just getting harassed, stalked. Things are ending up in your house that's clearly noticeable, you know? Then the neighbors are a little off. You think someone's dead, surprised they're not. And people just acting like it's normal. So, and there's kind of like a cycle in there going on. So, okay. Part two to this question, with these particular shows, is there a scene that sticks out for you that you just really enjoy? You think about a lot? Any scene at all?
Yeah, I think for Atlanta, there's a scene specifically that takes place on Lake Lanier, which it has its own like background and you know, history, which, you know, is very deep, which I'm not necessarily going to get into on here, but it is, you know, seemingly haunted, but there's a monologue that they have in that certain scene where it's just like, it's very haunting, especially with what's going on, and you just see like you see someone talking to what could be a spirit, you know, which is, it's just wild. It creeped me out. There were certain parts of that show that I don't think I could watch like in the dark alone. Mm-hmm. Like I have to have someone in the house or a light on somewhere, you know.
For me in Reservation Dogs, of course it's related to the deer woman, but it's the last episode we see her in the final season and we finally learn more about her origin, and we watch as she goes to confront someone from her past that hurt her and others, and it's an intense scene because we were seeing vulnerability from this character that we haven't seen before, but also we know what she's capable of, so it's you know what's coming, but there it's combining the horror of what happened in the past and what's about to happen with the emotional side of it. And it's just, it's such an impactful scene. I pretty much cried that entire episode, but it's also, it's just very intense. And there's something cathartic in the way that like watching a rape revenge film can be cathartic. It's very much reminded me of that kind of subgenre of horror. And it's just, I love Dear Woman. I love that legend. It's so good.
She sounds like she's evil, but with a purpose.
Yes, exactly.
I kind of went into a little detail already for the Adventure Time bit, but for Girl from Nowhere, the actress that plays this I don't even want to call her a being, this like thing. She is so good at like controlling the muscles in her face to go from like sad to happy in the same moment, to where it's like crying and laughing at the same time kind of deal. Mm-hmm. There's also like this very specific like laugh that she has that you like hear like echoed throughout the series. And it's just, honestly, it's so iconic. It just reminds me of, like, I don't know if you're ever watching, like, a drag show or something. Typically, they have, like, pre-recorded, like, drag queen laughter. Like, RuPaul has it, like, before all of the commercial breaks. So it just kind of reminds me of that. But it's just, like, honestly, that show, it's pretty unsettling for not being, like, outright horror, more like thriller. It's, yeah, it gives you some pretty grotesque images to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And here.
Yeah. I'll just say something from the other Black girl, because I feel like with The Watcher, it's the type of movie or series that you should just binge. You need to see for yourself type of thing. And I'll keep it spoiler-free because there's a lot of mysteries that's involved with the series, but there's a particular character named Hazel, who we learn more about. Like, she's new to the office and we learn her backstory. And again, keeping it spoiler free, she's just having a conversation with someone and they ask her loosely, this is not exactly it, but they pretty much ask her, like, what's one of your goals? What's something that you want that you feel like you deserve? And there's other people just talking about what they want. And the monologue that this girl delivered, it literally gave me chills because I felt that so much. It's not so much about what she wanted. She didn't want a particular job. She kind of just wanted to feel free, you know? And it was just like, oh my God, the chills. But I know it sounds like, what? But once you watch the series and you see everything come together, just for it to be at that point, it's like you, in some ways, will understand where she's coming from, even if you don't relate. Because we've all kind of, not all of us, but some of us, you know, been in positions like that. So, I don't know. I just thought that it was a really powerful scene. And I think about it often. Plus, the actress, Ashley Murray. She was also in Riverdale. She's incredible. She's fabulous. And I love her. So, but okay. So, now we've come down to our final topic, which is actually just like a bonus topic. And not saying that you had to have seen this movie, but have you guys seen the movie The School for Good and Evil?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I have.
So, it's...
Okay. Sorry. I was prepared. I was like, I saw it. I was like, oh, I gotta do it.
So, just like the premise of it is, it's about these two best friends, Sophie and Agatha. They find themselves on separate sides of a school. Like, the girls, there's this character named Sophie who she wants to go to this school called the School for Good and Evil. It's basically for fairy tale characters, you know, they prepare you, for everything. And so it's her dream to get out of that small town and go to this school. Agatha, you know, she's just more of a supporting friend. And she's like, well, I really don't want you to go. You know, she wants her to stay. But they both are pretty much ridiculed throughout the town. Like, people don't really care for them. People think that Sophie thinks that she's better than people, always calling her princess, her own parents. Oh, it's not really her parents. I think it's just her aunt. Don't really care for her. And then with Agatha, she cares for her mother. But everyone thinks that Agatha and her mother is a witch. You know, she kind of lives in this cottage that kind of looks like a witch's house. So this is not a spoiler because it's literally in the title. So the girls eventually get to the School for Good and Evil. And so they pretty much get flown in by a creature. And the creature drops you off at a school because they feel your energy. They feel what kind of person you are. So one gets dropped off in the School for Good, and one gets dropped off in, you know, the School for Evil. Again, this is not a spoiler. It is, it's in the trailer. Thank you. Sophie, who looks like a princess, she gets dropped off at the School for Evil. And it's just like, she thinks that they made a mistake. Agatha, she gets dropped off for the School of Good. She looks nothing like the other girls at all. You know, like, she kind of looks like a witchy woman, which I love witchy women. And even again, when Sophie gets over to the other school, she does not fit in at all. Everybody thinks that she's dropped off. She's having a hard time. So, yeah, it's an awesome movie. But am I missing anything, LT, since you've seen the movie?
No, that basically pretty much covers it. And it just like discusses their like journey through like discovering that morality is not just black or white. It's not mm-hmm. just like strictly good or evil. Sometimes you're both because you're yeah. a human. But no, I think the movie itself was really fun. It kind of made me think of the same kind of feeling I got when I watched the Spiderwick Chronicles for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, love obviously, this is going to capture magic within an adolescent. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to hear their thoughts on it like later. But yeah. like, I don't know. It was just like, it was a really kind of feel good fantasy film. There's like an outfit montage that I absolutely live for.
That scene, I literally screamed when I saw, like, what a moment.
Truly, truly. She's in this like super flowy gown with the big old bustle, and it's just fabulous.
Like, she just
she
ruined
owned
the school.
She owned that role, which honestly, good for her.
Mm-hmm. But okay, so since you kind of have the premise, the question is, of course, it's not, you know, it's not just like that where, you know, kind of like what LT said, where it's just you're either good or you're evil, blah, blah, blah. But just sticking with the premise of the storyline or the premise of this movie and everything like that, which school do you think that you would be dropped off at? And why?
I think, I mean, honestly, I'd probably be dropped off at the School of Good, but I'd probably want to be dropped off at the School of Evil just so I'm educated on certain things and, you know, the evil world can't catch me slipping. Like, I think I would want a demon teacher. I would want a demon as a teacher so they could teach me the ways so that I'm more well-equipped to deal with certain obstacles in the real world and the mm-hmm. shadow world, you know? So, yeah.
Okay.
For me, I feel like it could go either way. But there are two reasons that I think I might end up at the School for Evil. The first is that I don't really like people. I like animals. So that could be one reason. With the exception, of course, of everyone here.
Yeah.
Two, I'm an Ursula apologist. I think she did nothing wrong. I think that Ariel was the idiot for signing that contract and not reading the fine print. So for those reasons, I think I might end up at the School of Evil.
After watching the movie, I would definitely be in the School for Evil. There's like no question about it. I am way too like if for as my morality alignment chart is like way more chaotic neutral. It's just like I'm too self-serving. Of course I would be in the evil one. Their outfits are much better as well.
Yeah.
And like without giving away like a spoiler, this is just like a throwaway quote that's part of the movie. It's like during one of the classes that they're in for the School of Evil, which, by the way, is taught by Charlize Theron. Like, I would definitely mm-hmm. be there. One of the teachers is like, ugliness is freedom. It's just that it's such a high regard for, like, evil. Like, it's what you associate with it. Like, all of the Disney villains, they all look, right. like, you know, a little decrepit. But, you know, they still served.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. I would probably be in the School for Evil. Yeah. And they get to eat slop. I love slop.
Yeah, they just... It was so, like, their school looks terrible.
Truly. Compared to the good. Yeah. Are you in the good? They have like queen size beds.
And then they have like a evil, beauty room.
Truly.
They have a smile class.
Smiling class. Yes. Versus like uglification class, which I was like, oh, let's go.
Okay, so while watching the movie, or before I started watching it, because their marketing was kind of like, you know, which school would you be, which school would you go at, or be placed in, I used to think that I would be placed in the evil school, you know? Because, I don't know, sometimes you gotta do what makes you happy. And that includes yelling, that includes, you know, also, not in a mean way, but, you know, putting yourself first in some ways, you know? But then, you know what? I am a delicate, sweet little flower, so I think that I'd be in the good school. I mean, I'm somebody's princess and queen, so I'd be right in that smiling class, like, practicing. I would pass with flying colors.
You would definitely get that gold star.
Yeah.
And then no also, thunderclouds.
I agree. Like, I prefer the School of Evil. Like, their wardrobe was way better, in my opinion, especially Sophie's.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can, like, tweak it up a little. You know, get some other colors beyond pastel colors. So, it's okay. But, yeah. And that's pretty much it. Those are all the topics. I was also going to include a bonus, but it was going to be like a voices bonus thing. Like, if you could do like a voice, any voice you want. But I don't know. I don't want to make people feel comfortable. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it though. Okay. I'm reading the room.
No, I mean, like, there is one horror voice. Like, I'm not going to do it because I would absolutely do it zero justice. But it's just like, there's this movie called Munchies. It came, like, late 80s. I know, right? Like, super, like, out of field, out of left field. But there's this one character. I cannot for the life of me remember her name. But she's, like, short and petite. She's basically a drag queen. And this is going to bug me. So she almost sounds like if Bernadette Peters was, like, from the South and owned a gas station. If you can just like put all three of those things in together in your mind, and
so specific,
I know, right? And her wardrobe as well. Like, I know I could go on and on about like the costuming for her, but like literally, she has like the best one-liners. She's in a different outfit every single time you see her. Her hair is like higher, as high as it can be to God. But like literally, oh, her name's Melvis, not Melvis, like Elvis, okay, with an M. And she is just the best thing about that entire movie. But yeah, Munchies. She's got one of the most iconic voices other than the plant from Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay. But all right, well, you know, I'll leave that alone. Unless anybody else, you have a voice, no pressure.
All right.
Well, are you talking voices that we can do or voices from horror that we think are iconic?
Voices that you can do.
Okay. Because I'm a theater kid. I grew up a theater kid, so I do a lot of voices. I also have ADHD and possibly undiagnosed autism, so I do a lot of voices. but the only one that I can think of, and it's not even a horror thing, I will do a Mickey Mouse voice, but then like follow my husband around the house and say that I'm going to kill him in the Mickey Mouse voice. If that gives you a glimpse into my life, I'll be like, uh-huh, you're going to die. So yeah, it's... I like taking things that aren't necessarily horror and making them terrifying.
That's terrifying.
Oh, that's hilarious.
No, I need
just
to hear
imagine like it being completely dark in the house and hearing that next to you.
Now I need to hear you do like ghost face lines as Mickey. That'd be so funny.
What's your favorite scary movie? I'm hot now.
That was great. That was great.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Wow.
You gave me confidence to do my voice. You know, this is me as John Kassir, you know, as the crypt keeper, you know.
Nice.
Tales from the crypt. You know, sometimes I will go around the house, you know, and especially when under the influence of certain things, I will go around the house and, you know, just do my John Kassir, my best John Kassir, you know.
That's amazing. I love it.
I love that. Please send me a clip saying happy birthday on my birthday. Molly, please do that for me too.
You're just gonna get all these voice notes on your birthday of people doing random voices.
Best day ever. Oh my god. My face hurts.
And this was a good bonus. Yeah. This was a good bonus.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, thank you all. I don't have a voice.
I see what you're doing.
All right, gotta go. No, I mean, the only voice I can do is I kind of got it from the house bunny when she's like, Oliver, you know, she does those voices. I like to do that when I first meet people and then I never see them again, but that's that's fine. But no, thank you all, you know, so much for joining me on this episode. I had a lot of fun. Before we go, where can we find you all on social media? You know, please tell us everything. Brag about yourself.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'll go first. At The Evil Tyrone, spelled T-H-E-E-V-O-L. You know, that's love backwards. Tyrone on Instagram, Twitter /X. You know, all the social medias, YouTube, you know, that's where I do my horror discussions and, you know, my interviews. Mark Oestes, he calls me the Montel of the horror community. So, I was filling myself off that compliment right there. But yeah, you know, just catch me there doing my thing. If ever you want to come on and talk horror, you can always DM me or send me an email, theeviltyrone@gmail.com. And, you know, we can set something up, no matter if you're just a fan of horror or, you know, you're a writer, director, whatever. Like, I'm here to chop it up, you know, about your favorite tales and also, you know, anything you've got going on and beyond. You know, sometimes these conversations get kind of deep, you know, but that's just how it goes. That's how it goes.
For me, you can find me pretty much on all the social media platforms, just as my name, Molly Henry. Just make sure you don't miss the extra E in my last name. It's H-E-N-E-R-Y. It's very confusing. Except for on Twitter, which I refuse to call by the other name. On there, I am at Blogging Banshee. And you can find, I'm probably the most active on Twitter, but you can find me in all those places. And I talk a lot about, obviously, uterus horror films is a big thing for me. I talk a lot about gender snaps. Anyone that knows me, that's pretty much all I talk about. And of course, reviews and hopefully more original work will be on there as well with the upcoming queer horror film guide. So.
And you can catch me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I don't have like a posting schedule because what even is time? but definitely check me out on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at Queer Demon. Remember, the O is a zero because I'm just not that quick, unfortunately. But I just did a recent unboxing video that you should totally check out and see. I had so much fun opening it. And you can DM me your favorite scary movies. I just love to talk about this.
Nice. And thank you all again. So feel free to follow, you know, Bloody Disgusting on Instagram and Twitter, Be Disgusting Pod, or drop us an email at bedisgustingpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on TikTok for all things Bloody Disgusting. Be disgusting. So thank you all so much for listening to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast. Also have to say this because I try to be like my co-host, John. Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, and watch something you love. Just make sure it's something bloody. Bye.